We Who Live in the Heart by Kelly Robson. Narrated by Sneha Martin.
Ricky slipped in and out of consciousness as we carried her to the anterior sinus and strapped her into her hammock. Her eyelids drooped, but she kept forcing them wide. After we finished tucking her in, she pulled a handheld media appliance out of her pocket and called her friend Jane. "You're late," Jane said. The speakers flattened her voice slightly. "Are you okay?" Ricky was too groggy to speak. She poked her hand through the hammock's electrostatic membrane and panned the appliance around the sinus. Eddie and Chara both waved as the lens passed over them, but Jane was only interested in one thing. "Show me your face, Ricky. Talk to me. What is it like in there?" Ricky coughed, clearing her throat. "I don't know. It's weird. I can't really think." Her voice slurred from the anesthetic. "I could have answered, Jane, if she'd asked me. The first thing newbies notice is how strange it smells. Human olfaction is primal. Scents color our perceptions even when they're too faint to describe. Down below ground, the population crush makes it impossible to get away from human funk. Out here, it's the opposite. With no sense our brains recognize. That's why most of us fill our habs with stinky things. Pheromone misters, scented fabrics, ablative aromatic gels." Eventually, Ricky would get around to customizing the scentscape in her big new hab, but right then she was too busy trying to stay awake. Apparently, she'd promised Jane she'd check in as soon as she arrived. And not just a quick ping. She was definitely hurting, but the call was duty. "There's people. They're taking care of me." Ricky gazed blearily at our orang. "I was carried in by a porta bot. It's orange and furry. Long arms." "I don't care about the bot. Tell me about you."
"I'm fine. But my ears aren't working right. It's too noisy."
We live with a constant circulatory thrum. Gassy gurgles and fizzes, whumps, snaps, pops, and booms. Sound waves pulse through every surface. A deep hum you feel in your bones. Jane took a deep breath, let it out with a whoosh. "Okay, go to sleep. Call me when you wake up, okay?" Ricky's head lolled back, then she jerked herself awake.
"You should have come with me,"
Jane laughed. "I can't leave my clients, and anyway, I'd be bored." Ricky squeezed her eyes shut, blinked a few times, then forced them wide.
"No, you wouldn't. There's 7 other people here, and they're all nuts. You'd already be trying to fix them."
Vula snorted and stalked out of the sinus, her long black braids slapping her back. The rest of us just smiled and shook our heads. You can't hold people responsible for what they say when they're half conscious. And anyway, it's true. We're not your standard moles. We don't want to be. Only a mole would think we'd be bored out here. We have to take care of every necessity of life personally. Nobody's going to do it for us. Tapping water is one example. Equipment testing and maintenance is another. Someone has to manage the hygiene and maintenance bots, and we all share responsibility for health and safety. Making sure we can breathe is high on everyone's priority list, so we don't leave it up to chance. Finally, there's atmospheric and geographical data gathering. Mama's got to pay the bills. We're a sovereign socio-political entity, population 8, and we negotiate our own service contracts for everything. But other than that, sure, we have all the free time in the world. Otherwise, what's the point? We came out here to get some breathing room, mental and physical. Unlike the moles, we've got plenty of both. Have you ever seen a tulip? It's a flowering plant, no nutritional value, short bloom. Down below ground, they're grown in decorative troughs for special occasions. Ambassadorial visits, arts festivals, sporting events, that sort of thing. Anyway, take a tulip flower and stick an ovoid bladder where the stem was, and you've got the idea. Except big, really big. And the petals move. Some of us call it mama. I just call it home. The outer skin is a transparent, flexible, organic membrane. You can see right through to the central organ systems. The surrounding bladders and sinuses provide structure and protection. Balloons inside a bigger balloon, filled with helium and hydrogen. The whole organism ripples with iridescence. We live in the helium-filled sinuses. If you get close enough, you can see us moving around inside. We're the dark spots. While Ricky slept, I called everyone to the rumpus room for a quick status check. All seven of us lounged in the netting, enjoying the free-flowing oxygen-hydrogen mix, goggles and breathers dangling around our necks. I led the discussion, as usual. Nobody else can ever be bothered. Thoughts? I asked. Ricky seems okay, said Eddie. And I like, what's her name? The mole on the comm. Jane. Yeah, pretty smile, said Boosh. Ricky's fine, right, Vula? Vula frowned and crossed her arms. She hooked into the netting right next to the hatch and looked about ready to stomp out. I guess, she said. Rude, though. She was just trying to be funny, said Treasure. I can never predict who'll stick and who'll bounce. I thought Chara would claw her way back down below ground, right through the skin and nosedive home. Chara grinned. I still might. We laughed, but the camaraderie felt forced. Vula had everyone on edge. We'll all keep an eye on Ricky until she settles in, Eleanor said. Are we good here? I need to get back to training. Got a chess tournament, you know. You always have a tournament. I surveyed the faces around me, but it didn't look like anyone wanted to chat. As long as nobody hogs the uplink, I never have any problems, said Boosh. Who's training Ricky? Who do you think? I said. We have a rule. Whoever scared off the last one has to train the replacement. We all looked at Vula. Shit, she said. I hate training newbies. Stop running them off then, said Chara. Be nice. Vula scowled, fierce frown lines scoring her forehead. I've got important work to do. No use arguing with Vula. She was deep in a creative tangle, and had been for a while. I'll do it, I said. We better train Ricky right if we want her to stick. When Ricky woke up, I helped her out of the hammock and showed her how to operate the hygiene station. As soon as she'd hosed off the funk, she called Jane on her appliance. Take off your breather for a moment, Jane said. Goggles, too. I need to see your face. Ricky wedged her fingernails under the seal and pried off her breather. She lifted her goggles. When she grinned, deep dimples appeared on each cheek. Jane squinted at her through the screen. She nodded, and Ricky replaced the breather. It attached to her skin with a slurp. How do I look? Ricky asked. Normal enough for you? What's the failure rate on that thing? Low, Ricky said. 0.23%. Which is low, unless you're talking about death. Then it's high. But we have spares galore. Safety nests here, there, and everywhere. I could have chimed in with the info, but Jane didn't want to hear from me. I stayed well back and let Ricky handle her friend. Has anyone ever studied the long-term effects of living in a helium atmosphere? Jane asked. It can't be healthy.
eyes are a problem.
Ricky tapped a finger on a goggle lens. Corneas need oxygen, so that's why we wear these. The hammocks are filled with air, so we basically bathe in oxygen while we're sleeping. But you're right. Without that, the skin begins to slough. Jane made a face.
Ugh.
There's air in the common area, too. They call it the rumpus room. That's where they keep the fab and extruder. I'm supposed to be there now. I have to eat and then do an orientation session. Health, safety, all that good stuff. Don't forget to take some time to get to know your hab mates, okay? I met them when I got here. One of them is Vula, the artist, right? The sculptor? She's got to be interesting. Ricky shrugged. She looked grumpy. I was impressed. Pretty perceptive for someone who'd been half drowned in anesthetic. What's scheduled after training? Nothing. That's the whole point of coming here, right? I wondered if you remembered. A smile broke over Jane's face, star bright, even when glimpsed on a small screen at a distance. You need rest and recreation. Relaxation and reading, Ricky added. Maybe you'll take up a hobby. Oh, I will, said Ricky. Count on it. Yes, I was spying on Ricky. We all were. She seemed like a good egg, but with no recourse to on-the-spot conflict intervention, we play it safe with newbies until they settle in. Anyone who doesn't like it can pull down a temporary privacy veil to shield themselves from the bugs, but most don't bother. Ricky didn't. Plus, we needed a distraction. Whether it's 500,000 moles in a hole down below ground, or 8 of us floating around in the atmosphere, every hab goes through ups and downs. We'd been down for a while. Some of it was due to Vula's growly mood, the worst one we'd seen for a while. But really, we just needed a shake-up. Whether we realized it or not, we were all looking to Ricky to deliver us from ourselves. During orientation, Ricky and I had company. Boosh and Eddie claimed they needed a refresher and tagged along for the whole thing. Chara, Treasure, and Eleonora joined us halfway through. Even Vula popped out of her hab for a few moments and actually made an effort to look friendly. With all the chatter and distraction, I wasn't confident Ricky's orientation had stuck, so I shadowed her on her first maintenance rotation. The workflow is fully documented, every detail supported by nested step-by-steps and supervised by dedicated project management bugs that help take human error out of the equation. But I figured she deserved a little extra attention. Life support is our first priority, always. We clear the air printers, run live tests on the carbon dioxide digesters, and ground truth the readings on every single sensor. It's a tedious process, but not even Vula complains. She likes to breathe as much as any of us. Ricky was sharp, interested, not just in the systems that keep us alive, but in the whole organism, its biology, behavior, and habitat. She was even interested in the clouds around and the icy, slushy landscape below. She wanted to know about the weather patterns, wind, atmospheric layers, everything. I answered as best I could, but I was out of the conversational habit. That, and something about the line of her jaw had me tongue-tied. Am I asking too many questions, Doc? She asked, as we stumped back to the rumpus room after checking the last hammock. Let's keep to the life and death stuff for now, I said. Water harvesting is the next priority. To get it, we have to rise to the aquapause. There, bright sunlight condenses moisture on the skin and collects in the dorsal runnels where we tap it for storage. Access to the main inflation gland is just under the rumpus room. Ricky squeezed through the elasticized access valve. The electrostatic membrane pulled her hair into spikes that waved at the PM bots circling her head. I stayed outside and watched her smear hormone ointment on the marbled surface of the gland. Sinuses creaked as bladders began to expand. As we walked through the maze of branching sinuses, I showed her how to brace against the roll and use the momentum to pull herself through the narrow access slots. Once we got to the ring-shaped four-cavity, we hooked our limbs into the netting and waited. Rainbows rippled across the expanded bladder surfaces. We were nearly spherical, petals furled, and the wind rolled us like an untethered balloon. The motion makes some newbies sick and they have to dial up anti-nauseant. Not Ricky. She looked around with anticipation, as if she were expecting to see something amazing rise over the vast horizon. "Do you ever run into other whales?" she asked.
"I don't much care for that term," I said.
It came out gruffer than I intended. A dimple appeared at the edge of her breather. "Have you been out here long, Doc?"
"Yes.
Ask me an important question." "Okay." She waved her hand at the water kegs, nested at the bottom of the netting, collapsed into a pile of honeycomb folds. "Why don't you carry more water?"
"That's a good question."
"You don't need me to tell you, though. You can figure it out. Flip through your dash." The dimple got deeper. Behind her darkened goggles, her eyelids flickered as she reviewed her dashboards. Naturally, it took a little while. Our setup was new to her. I rested my chin on my forearms and waited. She surfaced quicker than I expected. "Mass budget, right? Water is heavy?"
"Yes."
"The mass dashboard also tracks our inertia. If we get too heavy, we can't maneuver. And heavy things are dangerous. Everything's tethered and braced, and we have safety nets. But if something got loose, it could punch through a bladder wall. Even through the skin. Easy." Ricky looked impressed. "I won't tell Jane about that." We popped into the aquapods. The sun was about 20 degrees above the horizon. Its clear orange light glanced across the thick violet carpet of helium clouds below. Overhead, the indigo sky rippled with stars. Bit of a shock for a mole. I let Ricky ogle the stars for a while. Water ran off the skin, a rushing, cascading sound like one of the big fountains down below ground. I cleared my throat. Ricky startled, eyes wide behind her goggles. Then she climbed out of the netting and flipped the valve on the overhead tap. Silver water dribbled through the hose and into the battery of kegs, slowing the expanding pleated walls. Ricky didn't always fill the quiet spaces with needless chatter. I liked that. We worked in silence until the kegs were nearly full, and when she began to question me again, I welcomed it. "Eddie said you were one of the first out here," Ricky said. "You figured out how to make this all work." I answered with a grunt, and then cursed myself. If I scared her away, Vula would never let me forget it. "That's right. Me and a few others." "You took a big risk." "Moving into the atmosphere was inevitable," I said. "Humans are opportunistic organisms. If there's a viable habitat, we'll colonize it." "Takes a lot of imagination to see this as viable."
"Maybe.
Or maybe desperation. It's not perfect, but it's better than down below ground. Down there, you can't move without stepping on someone. Every breath is measured, and every minute is optimized for resource resilience. That might be viable, but it's not human."
"I'm not arguing."
Ricky's voice pitched low, thick with emotion as she gazed at the stars in that deep sky. "I love it here."
Yeah, she wasn't a mole anymore. She was one of us already.
One by one, the kegs filled and began flexing through their purification routine. We called in the crab-like water bots and ran them through a sterilization cycle. Water work done, the next task was spot-checking the equipment nests. I let Ricky take the lead, stayed well back as she jounced through the cavities and sinuses. She was enthusiastic, confident, motivated even. Most newbies stay hunkered in their hammocks for a lot longer than her. We circled back to the rumpus room, inventoried the nutritional feedstock, and began running tests on the hygiene bots. I settled into the netting and watched Ricky pull a crispy snack out of the extruder. You must know all the other crews, the ones who live in the... Ricky struggled to frame the concept without offending me. You can call them whales if you want. I don't like it, but I've never managed to find a better word. She passed me a bulb of cold caffeine. How often do you talk to the people who live in the other whales, Doc? We don't have anything to do with them. Not anymore. How come? The whole reason we came out here is so we don't have to put up with anyone else's crap. You never see the other whales at all, not even at a distance? I drained the bulb. These organisms don't have any social behavior. But you must have to talk to them sometimes, don't you? Share info or troubleshoot? I collapsed the bulb in my fist and threw it to a hygiene bot. You lonely already? Ricky tossed her head back and laughed, a full belly guffaw. Come on, Doc. You have to admit, that's weird. She was relentless. Go ahead and make friends with the others if you want, I growled. Just don't believe everything they say. They've got their own ways of doing things, and so do we. We checked the internal data repeaters and then spent the rest of the shift calibrating and testing the sensor array, all the infrastructure that traps the data we sell to the atmospheric monitoring firms. I kept my mouth shut. Ricky maintained an aggressive cheerfulness, even though I was about as responsive as a bot. But my glacier-like chilliness, more than 10 years in the making, couldn't resist her. My hermit heart was already starting to thaw. If I'd been the one calling Jane every day, I would have told her the light is weird out here. We stay within the optimal thermal range, near the equator where the winds are comparatively warm and the solar radiation helps keep the temperature in our habitat relatively viable. That means we're always in daylight, running a race against nightfall, which is good for Mama, but not so good for us. Humans evolved to exist in a day-night cycle, and something goes haywire in our brains when we mess with that. So our goggles simulate our chosen ratio of light and dark. Me, I like to alternate 50-50. But I'll fool with the mix every so often just to shake things up. Vula likes the night, so she keeps things dimmer than most. Everyone's different. That's what the moles don't realize, how different some of us are. I did a little digging, and what I found out scared me, Jane said the next time Ricky checked in. Turns out there's huge gaps in atmospheric research. The only area that's really well monitored is the equator, and only around the beanstalk. Everywhere else, analysis is done by hobbyists who donate a few billable hours here and there. Ricky nodded. That's what Doc said. Hearing my name perked me right up. I slapped down two of my open streams and gave their feed my whole attention. Nobody really knows that much about the organism you're living inside, even less about the climate out there, and nearly nothing about the geography, not in detail. I never would have supported this decision if I'd realized how... Jane's pretty face contorted as she searched for the word. How willy-nilly the whole situation is. It's not safe. I can't believe it's even allowed. Allowed?
Who can stop us? People go where they want. Not if it's dangerous. You can't just walk into a sewage treatment facility or air purification plant. It's unethical to allow people to endanger themselves. Ricky snorted, fouling the valves on her breather and forcing her to take a big gulp of helium through her mouth.
Not all of us want to be safe, Jane.
The helium made her voice squeaky. Jane's expression darkened. Don't mock me. I'm worried about you.
I know, I'm sorry,
Ricky squeaked. She exhaled to clear her lungs and took a deep, slow breath through her nose. Her voice dropped to its normal register. Listen, I've only been here a few days.
6, Jane said.
If I see anything dangerous, you'll be the first to know. Until then, don't worry, I'm fine. Better than fine. I'm even sleeping. A lot. That was a lie. The air budget showed Ricky hadn't seen much of the inside of her hammock, but I wasn't worried. Exhaustion would catch up with her eventually. There's something else, Jane said. I've been asking around about your habmates. Vula's okay, it's just that lately none of her work has turned out the way she wants. You know artists. Their professional standards are always unreachable, setting themselves up to fail.
It's not about Vula, it's Doc.
Ricky bounced on her netting. Oh yeah? Tell me. Because I can't get a wink out of that one. Totally impervious. I maximized the feed to fill my entire visual field. In the tiny screen in Ricky's hand, Jane's dark hair trailed strands across her face and into her mouth. She pushed them back with an impatient flick of her fingers. She was in an atrium, somewhere with stiff air circulation. I could just make out 7 decks of catwalk arching behind her, swarming with pedestrians.
Pull down a veil, Jane said. You might have lurkers.
I do. Ricky answered. 4 at least. I'm the most entertaining thing inside Mama for quite a while. It doesn't bother me. Let them lurk.
But Jane insisted, so Ricky pulled down a privacy veil, and the bug feed winked out. I told myself whatever Jane had found out didn't matter. It would bear no relation to reality. That's how gossip works, especially gossip about ancient history. But even so, a little hole opened up under my breastbone, and it ached. Only 6 days and I already cared what Ricky thought. I wanted her to like me. So I set about trying to give her a reason. A few days later, we drifted into a massive storm system, Ricky's first big one. I didn't want her to miss it, so I bounced aft and hallooed to her at a polite distance from her hab. She was lounging in her netting, deep in multiple streams, twisting a lock of her short brown hair around her finger. She looked happy enough to see me, no wariness behind her gaze, no chill. We settled in to watch the light show. It was an eye-catcher. Bolts zagged to the peaks of the ice towers below, setting the fog alight with expanding patches of emerald green and acid magenta. 2 big bolts forked overhead with a mighty whoomp. Ricky didn't even jump.
What was that? She asked.
I was going to stay silently mysterious, but then remembered I was trying to be friendly.
That, I said, was lunch. A dark splotch began to coalesce at the spot where the 2 bolts had caressed each other, a green and violet pastel haze in the thin, milky fog. We banked slowly, bladders groaning, massive sinus walls clicking as we changed shape to ride the wind currents up, up, and then the massive body flexed just enough to reveal 2 petals reaching into the coalescing bacteria bloom. Ricky launched herself out of the netting and clung to the side of her hab, trying to get a better view of the feeding behavior. When the bloom dissipated, she turned to me.
That's
all it does, this whale? Just search for food? Eat, drink, and see the sights, I said. What else does anyone need from life? Good company, I thought, but I didn't say it. The light show went on for hours. Ricky was fascinated from start to finish. Me? I didn't see it. I spent the whole storm watching the light illuminate her face. What else does anyone need from life? That was me trying to be romantic. Clumsy. Also, inaccurate. When we first moved out here, my old friends and I thought our habs would eventually become self-contained. Experience killed that illusion pretty quick. We're almost as dependent on the planetary civil apparatus as anyone. Without feedstock, for example, we'd either starve or suffocate. Not sure which would happen first. It has a lot of mass, so we can't stockpile much. Then there's power. Funding it is a challenge when you're supplying 8 people as opposed to 8 million. No economy of scale in a hab this size. It's not the power feed itself that's the problem, but the infrastructure. We're always on the move, so the feed has to follow us around and provide multiple points of redundancy. Our ambient power supply costs base market value plus a massive buyback on the research and development. Data has to follow us around too, but we don't bother with redundancy. It's not critical. You'd think it was more important than air, though, if you saw us when the data goes down. Shrieking. Curses. Boosh just about catatonic. She's a total media junkie. Eleonora, wall-eyed with panic, especially if she's in the middle of a tournament. Chess is her drug of choice. Vula, Eddie, and me, in any state from suave to suicidal, depending on what we're doing when the metaphorical umbilical gets yanked out of our guts. Treasure and Chara are the only ones who don't freak out. Usually, they're too busy boning each other. Without data, we couldn't stay here either. If we only had each other to talk to, it'd be a constant drama cycle. But we're all plugged into the hab cultures down below ground. We've got hobbies to groom, projects to tend, performances to cheer, games to play, friends to visit. Finally, as an independent political entity, we need brokers and bankers to handle our economic transactions and lawyers to vet our contracts. We all need the occasional look-in from med techs and physical therapists. And when we need a new crew member, we contract a recruiter. You look tired, Jane said, the next time Ricky called. I thought you said you were sleeping. Ricky hung upside down in her netting. She'd made friends with the orang. It squatted in front of her, holding the appliance while she chatted with Jane. I've been digging through some old work. She dangled her arms, hooked her fingers in the floor grid and stretched. I came up with a new approach to my first dissertation. Jane gaped. Her mouth worked like she was blowing bubbles. I know, Ricky added. I'll never change, right? Don't try that with me. Jane's eyes narrowed. You have a choice. Ricky raised her hands in mock surrender. Okay, take it easy. You can keep working on getting better, or you can go back to your old habits. It's not your fault, Jane. You're a great therapist. This isn't about me, you idiot, Jane yelled. It's about you. I tried, Jane. Ricky's voice was soft, ardent. I really tried. So hard. I know you did. Jane sucked in a deep breath. Don't throw away all your progress. They went on and on like that. I didn't listen, just checked in now and then to see if they were still at it. I knew Ricky's story. I'd read the report from the recruiter.
The privacy seal had timed out, but I remembered the details. Right out of the crash, she'd dived into an elite chemical engineering program, the kind every overfond crash manager wants for their favorite little geniuses. Sounds good, doesn't it? Isn't that where you'd want to put your little Omi or Arkham, little Carrie or Kareem? But what crash managers don't realize, because their world is full of guided discovery opportunities and subconscious learning stimuli, is that high-prestige programs are grinders. Go ahead, dump a creche full of young brilliants inside. Some of them won't come out whole. I know. I went through one myself. When Ricky crashed out of the chem program within spitting distance of an advanced degree, she bounced to protein engineering. She did a lot of good work there before she cracked. Then she moved into pharmaceutical modeling. A few more years of impressive productivity before it all went up in smoke. By that time, she wasn't young anymore. The damage had accumulated. Her endocrinologist suggested intensive peer counseling might stop the carnage. So in stepped Jane, who applied her pretty smile, her patience, and all her active listening skills to try to gently guide Ricky along a course of life that didn't include cooking her brain until it scrambled. At the end of that long conversation through the appliance, Ricky agreed to put her old work under lockdown so she could concentrate on the here and now, which meant all her attention was focused on us. Ricky got into my notes. I don't keep them locked down. Anyone can access them. Free and open distribution of data is a primary force behind the success of the human species, after all. Don't we all learn that in the crash? Making data available doesn't guarantee anyone will look at it, and if they do, chances are they won't understand it. Ricky tried. She didn't just skim through, she really studied. Shift after shift, she played with the numbers and gamed my simulation models. Maybe she slept, maybe not. I figured Ricky would come looking for me if she got stumped. So I dehermited, banged around in the rumpus room, put myself to work on random little maintenance tasks. When Ricky found me, I was in the caudal stump, dealing with the accumulated waste pellets. Yes, that's exactly what it sounds like. Half-kilogram plugs of dry solid waste covered in wax and transferred from the labs by the hygiene bots. Liquid waste is easy. We vaporize it, shunt it into the gas exchange bladder, and flush it through gill-like permeable membranes. Solid waste, well, just like anyone, we'd rather forget about it as long as possible. We rack the pellets until there's about 200. Then we jettison them. Ricky pushed up her goggles and scrubbed knuckles over her red-rimmed eyes. "Why don't you automate this process like you do for liquids?" Ricky asked as she helped me position the rack over the valve. "No room for non-essential equipment in the mass budget," I said. I dilated the interior shutter, and the first pellet clicked through. A faint pink blush formed around the valve's perimeter, only visible because I'd dialed up the contrast on my goggles to watch for signs of stress. A little hormone ointment took care of it. Not too much, or we'd get a band of inflexible scar tissue, and then I'd have to cut out the valve and move it to another location. That's a long, tricky process, and it's not fun. There's only two bands of tissue strong enough to support a valve. I bent down and stroked the creamy striated tissue at my feet. This is number two, and really, it barely holds. We have to treat it gently. Why risk it, then? Take it out and just use the main valve. A sarcastic comment bubbled up. "Have you never heard of a safety exit?" But I gazed into her big brown eyes, and it faded into the clouds. "We need two valves in case of emergencies," I mumbled. Ricky and I watched the pellets plunge through the sky. When they hit the ice slush, the concussive wave kicked up a trail of vapor plumes, concentric rings lit with pinpoints of electricity, so far below, each flash just a spark in a violet sea. A flock of jellies fled from the concussion, flat shells strobing with reflected light, trains of ribbon-like tentacles flapping behind. Ricky looked worried.
Did we hit any of them?
I shook my head. Nope, they can move fast. After we'd finished dumping waste, Ricky said,
Say, Doc, why don't you show me the main valve again?
I puffed up a little at that. I'm proud of the valves. Always tinkering, always innovating, always making them a little better. Without the valves, we wouldn't be here. Far forward, just before the peduncle isthmus, a wide band of filaments connects the petals to the bladder superstructure. The isthmus skin is thick with connective tissue and provides enough structural integrity to support a valve big enough to accommodate a cargo pod. We pulled you in here. I patted the collar of the shutter housing. Whoever prepared the pod had put you in a pink body bag. Don't know why it was such a ridiculous color. When Vula saw it, she said, It's a girl. I laughed. Ricky winced. That joke makes sense, old style, I explained.
No, I get it. Birth metaphor. I'm not a creshy doc.
I know. We wouldn't have picked you if you were.
Why did you pick me?
I grumbled something. Truth is, when I ask our recruiter to find us a new habmate, the percentage of viable applications approaches zero. We look for a specific psychological profile. The two most important success factors are low self-censoring and high focus. People who say what they think are never going to ambush you with long-fermented resentments. And obsessive people don't get bored. They know how to make their own fun. Ricky tapped her fingernail on a shutter blade.
Your notes aren't complete, Doc.
She stared up at me, unblinking. No hint of a dimple.
Why are you hoarding information?
I'm not.
Yes, you are.
There's nothing about reproduction.
That's because I don't know very much about it.
The other whale crews do, and they're worried about it.
You must know something, but you're not sharing. Why?
I glared at her. I'm an amateur independent researcher. My methods aren't rigorous. It would be wrong to share shaky theories.
The whale crews had a collective research agreement once. You wrote it.
She fired the document at me with a flick of her finger. I slapped it down and flushed it from my buffer.
That agreement expired. We didn't renew.
That's a lie. You dissolved it and left to find your own whale. I aimed my finger at the bridge of her goggles and jabbed the air.
Yes, I ran away.
So did you.
She smiled.
I left a network of Habs with 250 million people who can all do just fine without me. You ran from a few hundred who need you.
Running away is something I'm good at. I bounced out of there double time.
Ricky didn't call after me. I wouldn't have answered if she had. The next time she talked to Jane, Ricky didn't mention me. I guess I didn't rate high enough on her list of problems. I didn't really listen to the details as they chatted. I just liked having their voices in my head while I tinkered with my biosynthesis simulations. Halfway through their session, Vula pinged me.
You can quit spying, she said. None of us are worried about Ricky anymore.
I agreed and shut down the feed. Ricky's been asking about you, by the way, Vula added. Your history with the other whales. Tell her everything.
You sure?
I've been spying on her for days. It's only fair. Better she heard the story from Vula than me. I still can't talk about it without overheating. And they tell me I'm scary when I'm angry. Down below ground, the air is thick with rules written and unwritten. The slowly decaying husks of 30,000 years of human history dragged behind us from Earth. And the most important of these is cooperation for mutual benefit. Humans being human, that's only possible in conditions of resource abundance. Not just actual numerical abundance, but more importantly, the perception of abundance. When humans are confident there's enough to go around, life is easy, and we all get along, right? Ha! Cooperation makes life possible, but never easy. Humans are hard to wrangle. Tell them to do one thing and they'll do the opposite more often than not. One thing we all agree on is that everyone wants a better life. Only problem is, nobody can agree what that means. So we have an array of Habs offering a wide variety of sociocultural options. If you don't like what your Hab offers, you can leave and find one that does. If there isn't one, you can try to find others who want the same things as you and start your own. Often, just knowing options are available keeps people happy. Not everyone, though. Down below ground, I simply hated knowing my every breath was counted, every kilojoule measured, every moment of service consumption or contribution accounted for in the transparent economy, every move modeled by human capital managers and adjusted by resource optimization analysts. I got obsessed with the numbers in my debt dashboard. Even though it was well into the black, all I wanted to do was drive it up as high and as fast as I could so nobody would ever be able to say I hadn't done my part. Most people never think about their debt. They drop a veil over the dash and live long, happy, ignorant lives, never caring about their billable rate and never knowing whether or not they siphoned off the efforts of others. But for some of us, that debt counter becomes an obsession. An obsession and ultimately an albatross chained around our necks. I dreamed about an independent habitat with abundant space and unlimited horizons, and I wasn't the only one. When we looked, there it was, floating around the atmosphere. Was it dangerous? Sure. But a few firms provided services to risk takers, and they're always eager for new clients. The crews that shuttle ice climbers to the poles delivered us to the skin of a very large whale. I made the first cut myself. Solving the problems of life was exhilarating. Air, food, water, warmth. We were explorers, just like the mountain climbers of old, ascending the highest peaks wearing nothing but animal hides, like the first humans, revolutionary. Our success attracted others, and our population grew. We colonized new whales, and once we got settled, our problems became more mundane. I have a little patience for administrative details, but the burden soon became agonizing. Unending meetings to chew over our collective agreements, measuring and accounting and debits and credits, and assigning value to everyone's time. This was exactly what we'd escaped. Little more than 1 year in the clouds, and we were reinventing all the old problems from scratch. Nobody needs that. I stood right in the middle of the rumpus room inside the creature I'd cut into with my own hands and gave an impassioned speech about the nature of freedom and independence and reminded them all of the reasons we'd left. If they wanted their value micro-accounted, they could go right back down below ground. I thought it was a good speech, but apparently not. When it came to a vote, I was the only one blocking consensus. I believe, hand to heart, if they'd only listened to me and did what I said,
everything would have been fine, and everyone would have been happy. But some people can never really be happy unless they're making other people miserable. They claimed I was trying to use my seniority, skills, and experience as a lever to exert political force. I'd become a menace. And when they told me I had to submit to psychological management, I left. Turned out we'd brought the albatross along with us, after all. When Jane pinged me a few days later, I was doing the same thing as millions down below ground, watching a newly arrived arts delegation process down the beanstalk and marveling at their dramatic clothing and prosthetics. I pinged her back right away. Even though I knew she would probably needle me about my past, I didn't hesitate. I missed having Ricky and Jane in my head, and life was a bit lonely without them. Also, I was eager to meet her. I wasn't the only one. The whole crew was burning with curiosity about Ricky's pretty friend. When Jane's fake melted into reality, she was dressed in a shiny black party gown, long dark hair poofed over her shoulders, held off her face with little spider clips that gathered the locks into tufts. Her chair was a spider model, too, with eight delicate ruby and onyx legs that cradled her torso. "Hi, Doc," she said. "It's nice to meet you, finally. I'm a friend of Ricky's. I think you know that, though." A friend? Not a therapist, peer counselor, or emotional health consultant. That was odd. And then it dawned on me. Jane had been donating her time ever since Ricky joined us. She probably wanted to formalize her contract, start racking up the billable hours. When I glanced through her metadata, my heart began to hammer. Jane's rate was sky high. "We can't float your rate," I blurted. "Not now, maybe eventually, but we'd have to find another revenue stream." Jane's head jerked back and her gaze narrowed. "That's not why I pinged you," she said. "I don't care about staying billable. I never did. All I want to do is help people." I released a silent sigh of relief. "What can I do for you?" "Nothing. I just wanted to say hi and ask how Ricky's getting along." "Ricky's fine. Nothing to worry about." I always get gruff around beautiful women. She brightened. "She's fitting in with you all?" "Yeah. One of the crew. She's great. I love her." I bit my lip and quickly added, "I mean, we all like her. Even Vula, and she's picky." I blushed. Badly. Jane noticed, and a gentle smile touched the corners of her mouth. But she was a kind soul and changed the subject. "I've been wondering something, Doc. Do you mind if I ask a personal question?" I scrubbed my hands over my face in embarrassment and nodded. She wheeled her chair a bit closer and tilted toward me. "Do you know what gave you the idea to move to the surface? I mean, originally, before you'd ever started looking into the possibility." "Have you read Zane Grey's Riders of the Purple Sage?" I asked. "You must have." "No." She looked confused, like I was changing the subject. "You should. Here." I tossed her a multi-bookmark compilation. Back down below ground, I'd given them out like candy at a creche party. She could puzzle through the diction of the ancient original or read it in any number of translations, listen to a variety of audio versions and dramatic readings, or watch any of the hundreds of entertainment docs it had inspired. I'd seen them all. "This is really old. Why did you think I'd know it?" She flipped to the summary. "Oh, I see. One of the characters is named Jane." "Read it. It explains everything." "I will. But maybe you could tell me what to look for?" Her smile made me forget all about my embarrassment.
It's about what humans need to be happy. Sure, we evolved to live in complex, interdependent social groups. But before that, we were nomads, pursuing resource opportunities in an open, sparsely populated landscape. That means for some people, solitude and independence are primary values. She nodded, and I could see she was trying hard to understand. Down below ground, when I was figuring all this out, I tried working with a therapist. When I told him this, he said, "We also evolved to suffer and die from violence, disease, and famine. Do you miss that too?" Jane laughed. "I hope you fired him." So one book inspired all this. It's not just a book, it's a way of life. The freedom to explore wide open spaces, to come together with like-minded others and form loose-knit communities based on mutual aid, and to know that every morning you'll wake up looking at an endless horizon. These horizons aren't big enough? She waved at the surrounding virtual space, a default grid with dappled patterns, as if a directional light source were shining through gently fluttering leaves. For some, maybe. For me, pretending isn't enough. I'll read it. It sounds very... She pursed her lips, looking for the right word. Romantic. I started to blush again, so I made an excuse and dropped the connection before I made a fool of myself. Then I drifted down to the rumpus room and stripped off my goggles and breather.
"Whoa," Bush said. "Doc, what's wrong?"
Eleonora turned from the extruder to look at me, then fumbled her caffeine bulb and squirted liquid across her cheek.
"Wow."
She wiped the liquid up with her sleeve. "I've never seen you look dreamy before. What happened?"
"I'm in love," I thought.
"Jane pinged me," I said instead. Boosh called the whole crew. They came at a run, even Vula. In a small hab, any crumb of gossip can become legendary. I made them beg for the story, then drew it out as long as I could.
"Can you ask her to ping me?" Eddie asked Ricky when I was done.
"I would chat with her for more than a couple minutes, unlike Doc," said Treasure.
Chara grinned lasciviously.
"Can I lurk?"